pursuing the same kinds of policies that we pursued over the last 8 years is not going to bring down the deficit. Dude. And frankly, Senator McCain voted for 4 out of 5 of President Bush's budgets.
Senator Obama, I am not President Bush. If you wanted to run against President Bush, you should have run 4 years ago. I'm going to give a new direction to this economy in this country.
Fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We are going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, we look at the final debate between presidential candidates John McCain and Barack Obama, a campaign in which the gloves came off, but in which substantive policy differences between the two contenders were also discussed in depth as we move into the last days of one of the most important elections of our time. Helping us sort through last night's event and the current status of the political race in our country and also here at home in Wisconsin, in our studio, Professor of Political Science Eric Giordano of UW-Marathon County, and on the phone, Professor of Political Science Dennis Riley of UW-Stevens Point. Today we're going to be playing clips of last night's debate, and we'll also tell you what the candidates have been saying in visits to Wisconsin over the past 2 weeks. Most of all, we want to hear from you. What was your reaction to the debate last night, and did it change the way you will vote? Our lines are open for your phone calls at 261-6371, 261-6371, or toll-free, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Dennis, Eric, thanks for being with us today.
Happy to be here.
Great.
And I'd like your reaction very quickly. Dennis, we'll go first to you. Who do you think won last night?
Well, I think it's hard to say when they don't give you a scorecard, but basically, McCain needed something much more dramatic than he was able to pull off, and I think Obama solidified in a number of people's minds that he's safe enough to be president, and I think that's the last hurdle for him, is to solidify that with enough people to be elected.
And Eric Giordano, do you agree, or do you have a different perspective?
Oh, no, I basically agree. I do think, though, that most sort of neutral or objective observers would say that that was McCain's best debate, but I think that it's correct to say that it probably wasn't enough to separate the two in any significant way.
We are going to get to analysis of the debate and play clips, but before we do that, because I know if I don't do this now, we're not going to get to it once we get going, I'm going to play you a couple of news stories of campaign appearances by John McCain in Mosinee and then also Michelle Obama in Wausau. We'll start with the appearance by John McCain. This is Wisconsin Public Radio's Sean Johnson reporting.
The Arizona Republican told a crowd gathered on a windy tarmac that he needed them to work for him.
This is about the seventh or eighth time that pundits have said McCain's campaign's in trouble. We fooled them then, and we'll fool them again, and they'll—and I'm telling you, my friends, we'll win the state of Wisconsin with your help. We will win it here, and I know we will.
McCain attacked Obama for not supporting the war in Iraq. The Arizona senator said he would continue the war until it ends in a U.S. victory.
You ever hear the word victory cross Senator Obama's lips?
No!
Nor have I. Nor have I.
McCain also touted the $300 million mortgage buyback program he introduced this week.
If your home value is down, we need to buy up your mortgage, give you a mortgage that you can afford at rates you can afford, and stay in your home.
The Obama campaign says the downside of McCain's mortgage plan is that it would reward irresponsible banks at the taxpayers' expense. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Michelle Obama told the predominantly female audience at UW-Marathon County that she and her husband came from working-class backgrounds and understood their struggle.
Several years ago, we finally paid off our student loans, and that's only because Barack wrote 2 best-selling books.
On stage, 4 working women told their stories, including Bonnie Anderson, a 62-year-old dental hygienist.
It would cost $800 for a root canal.
Anderson spoke of an elderly couple who came into her office, the man suffering from Alzheimer's and needing oral surgery with no money to pay for it.
She's sitting in the chair saying, "We have no money. We're living on Social Security." She said to me, "Bonnie, what should I do?" And I said, "I don't know." And I just hope with all my heart that Barack Obama gets elected. The healthcare system is as broken as Wall Street.
Michelle Obama told the group that if elected, her husband would get affordable health care to all Americans and give the middle class a tax cut. And she said the women's stories were not unusual.
The challenges that these women and families are facing are typical of what is happening all across America. Something is broken, and it needs to be fixed.
Left unanswered, how the estimated $700 billion bailout for Wall Street would leave any money for tax breaks or health care on Main Street. In Wausau, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News.
And if you just joined us on Route 51 today, we are going to be looking at the state of the presidential campaign in Wisconsin and in America as we move into its final days, and also analyze last night's final debate between John McCain and Barack Obama. Our guests, political science professor Dennis Riley and Eric Giordano. Dennis Riley, your analysis of the differing tones of those two campaigns as they came through central Wisconsin.
Well, when they were here, it wasn't quite as different as the tone has been nationally. Michelle Obama did the kind of thing that she does. She talked to a bunch of women about the difficulties of handling the situations that they happen to be in. McCain's was a quick stop rally where he tried to rally the troops to get out and go to work for him and win Wisconsin. And he talked about the war in Iraq, which has been part of what he says. But, you know, essentially he was not running the same kind of heavy-handed negative campaign on the tarmac that day that he has been running in some sense on his television ads, which have been relentlessly negative.
Eric Giordano, do you agree with that? Do you think the tone has been relentlessly negative?
Well, certainly there's been a lot of negativity. Not that unusual for this time of year in a presidential race. I think it reflects the urgency in the McCain camp. As we know, there's no silver medal in the presidential race. It's winner take all, and you know, as the second runner right now, McCain has got to have that sense of urgency. Some may say the negativity bordering a bit on desperation. He's getting advice that he needs to take the gloves off. He needs to find a way to separate himself and push forward. Whether it'll work or not is really a big question.
And what I have heard, and maybe one of you can confirm this for me, I heard a report on the radio today that McCain is pulling his television ads out of Wisconsin. Is he giving up on this state the same way he gave up on Michigan? And if that's the case, what does that portend for his chances on November 4th?
Well, what I had heard was a little bit different, was that the Republican National Committee was pulling all of its supportive ads out and all of its money out of Wisconsin. I hadn't heard the final confirmation that McCain was going to pull out, but he may be, and it would be quite a signal, because he would have, you know, he's got to win some states, and he can't spend all of his money defending the states that George Bush won last time. That just isn't going to be enough, given what seems to be happening in certain parts of the country. So if he does pull out, it really is a signal that he's feeling that his campaign is really beginning to sink, and he's got to save it someplace that I'm not quite sure of.
What does it say when he's got a campaign in Virginia where the latest polls show Obama an astonishing 10 points ahead, and in places like North Carolina and Missouri, which are traditionally red states?
This shows that the McCain campaign is in serious trouble. And if it's true, even if only the party is pulling out of Wisconsin, it certainly sends a signal that this is a state that perhaps they're not sure they can win. And as Dennis said, if they can't win Wisconsin, if they can't win a few of these other close states, then it's going to be very, very challenging for McCain to actually come out with a victory.
Eric Giordano and Dennis Riley providing analysis, and we want to hear some analysis from you as well. What do you think of the last days of the campaign between John McCain and Barack Obama? What did you think of last night's debate? Who do you think won? We want to hear from you at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, formerly Fiserv Health, providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
For more information on regional programming for North Central Wisconsin here at Wisconsin Public Radio, or to have your community event listed with us, check out our local website at WPR.org/WHRM. This is Route 51. We are looking at last night's debate and the ongoing campaign between John McCain and Barack Obama. I just said George W. Bush because I'm looking at an audio clip that I'm about to play labeled No Bush, and that has been the albatross around John McCain's neck, the fact that Obama has been tying him and apparently successfully to the last 8 years of the Bush administration. He tried to address that last night. Let's listen.
Pursuing the same kinds of policies that we pursued over the last 8 years is not going to bring down the deficit. And frankly, Senator McCain voted for 4 out of 5 of President Bush's budgets.
Senator Obama, I am not President Bush. If you wanted to run against President Bush, you should have run 4 years ago. I'm going to give a new direction to this economy in this country.
If I occasionally mistaken your policies for George Bush's policies, it's because on the core economic issues that matter to the American people, on tax policy, on energy policy, on spending priorities, you have been a vigorous supporter of President Bush. Now, you've shown independence, commendable independence, on some key issues like torture, for example, and I give you enormous credit for that. But when it comes to economic policies, essentially what you are proposing is 8 more years of the same thing. And it hasn't worked. And I think the American people understand it hasn't worked. We need to move in a new direction.
All right.
Let me just say
about 30 seconds.
But it's very clear that I have disagreed with the Bush administration. I have disagreed with leaders of my own party. I got the scars to prove it. Whether it be bringing climate change to the floor of the Senate for the first time, whether it be opposition to spending and earmarks, whether it be the issue of torture, whether it be the conduct of the war in Iraq, which I vigorously oppose, whether it be on fighting the pharmaceutical companies, on Medicare prescription drugs importation, whether it be fighting for an HMO patient's bill of rights, whether it be the establishment of the 9/11 Commission. I have a long record of reform and fighting through on the floor of the United States Senate.
That was a clip from last night's debate, and it contained what a lot of people are saying was the big zinger of the night. I'm not George Bush. Dennis Riley, was he successful in distancing himself from Bush and his record?
Well, on some issues, but the point is that this election is essentially an election about economics, and I don't think he separated himself particularly on economics. I mean, if he wanted to, he could have said, I voted against the Bush tax cuts, but since he intends to continue those, he probably can't. So he really has no way, I don't think, viable way to distance himself from the Bush administration and from the notion that deregulation is what caused all of this, that extreme form of capitalism that we've been trying, or sort of extreme form of capitalism. And I have a feeling that he wasn't able to really break the knot that ties him to George Bush on that one crucial issue, that is on how the economy got into the mess it got into, and whether there's any way to get us back out of it.
Yeah, I think I agree that was the best line that McCain had. If you wanted to run against President Bush, you should have run against him 4 years ago. The problem that McCain is facing is that in order to secure his party's nomination, so 12, 18 months ago, he was campaigning on the closeness of his policy positions with the Bush administration, and to establish his credentials, to establish himself as a real Republican. And unfortunately, I think he's really been painted with that association, and he should have unleashed that line months ago, not just in the last debate.
That's a very good point Eric's making there, that he really, if he's painted into a corner, he was holding the paintbrush most of the time.
261-6371, 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742, that's 780-9742. What do you think? Who do you think won last night's debate? Who do you think will win the race for president? If you had to vote today, would you vote for John McCain or vote for Barack Obama? Dennis Riley, you mentioned it was the extreme form of capitalism. I think those were your words that got us into this mess.
Many on the conservative Republican side, and I'm thinking specifically of people like Rush Limbaugh, say it wasn't that at all. It was Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. It was the poor people in the inner city all getting these mortgages that they couldn't pay back, and it was social engineering caused by liberal Democrats that got us into the mess.
Well, I don't think there's a whole lot of evidence for that. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac may have indeed given out some loans or, you know, guaranteed some loans that were a little bit on the questionable side. But it was the regulators not doing their jobs. It was the lack of regulation, the deregulation that began almost 30 years ago now, that really set it up for the ability of these institutions to go out and sell those mortgages in those kinds of places. And it was the lack of any regulations of the so-called credit default swaps, the lack of any regulations, significant regulations of the ability of the mortgage industry to cut up mortgages into pieces, package them as securities, sell them to investment banks, who in turn sold them to very wealthy people, hedge funds, sold them to the Kuwait, you know, sold them all over the place. That was all kind of capitalism run rampant. At least that's the popular impression, and I think it makes more sense than suggesting it was two large government-regulated institutions that were at the heart of the problem.
Let me play some comments from Melvin Laird, the former defense secretary, long-serving congressman from Marshfield back in the 60s and actually the 50s, who I interviewed a little over a week ago, and he places the blame on Congress and on the regulators, and I asked him specifically that question about unfettered capitalism being to blame.
Congress is somewhat responsible because they are the oversight body, and they went along with some things that I think they shouldn't have gone along with, and it's caused a tremendous crisis as far as our financial affairs are concerned. So I understand the problems that they have, but I also feel that they should have been conducting the oversight that is set forth in our Constitution for the Senate and the House of Representatives. Yes, the executive branch failed too, but the Congress has the oversight responsibility, and I don't think they exercised it properly.
I've been listening to commentators who are both conservative and liberals. The conservatives say the Democrats used Fannie and Freddie to get home loans to people who couldn't pay them back. And the Democrats, including Barack Obama, say it's Republican support for laissez-faire free market economics that's to blame, all the deregulation, and they're drawing a parallel with Herbert Hoover before the Great Depression. What do you think of that?
I don't think that's a very good comparison. I feel that the Congress likes to escape its responsibility for exercising oversight, but it never should.
That's former Congressman and Marshfield native Melvin Laird, and I think the Republican kind of bristled at the name Herbert Hoover, which, speaking of albatrosses hung around the neck, that was one that's plagued the Republican Party for most of the 20th century.
Well, I have to agree with Mel Laird on that one. I really don't think you can blame just Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, nor can you just blame, as Rush Limbaugh apparently does, some kind of liberal engineered policy in favor of the you know, working poor. I think really it's a combination of really poor consumer choices, probably spurred on by, you know, a culture of consumerism, in combination with, you know, financial institutions on Wall Street that were unregulated or deregulated and that were making money hand over fist on derivatives of bad mortgage loans, and nobody wanted to put a stop to that as long as the green was flowing. But unfortunately, we realize now too late that they should have been regulated.
I want to take a phone call before the news break. 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742, 780-9742, if you'd like to weigh in. Patrick in Wisconsin Rapids, you're on Route 51. Hello, Patrick.
Yeah, hi. I guess if I had anything to say, and I'll take my answers off the air, is either candidate gives a good platform. gives a good, clear, concise answer on how to fix the problems that are, you know, arising economically, fuel costs, stuff like that.
Did you say either of them or neither of them?
Either of them. Either of them.
Okay.
Either of them are giving any kind of clear, concise answer. And I guess I just wish more people would get more educated to politics and stuff like that in the United States, because it's really sad. We look at Obama, and he sounds like more government, and we look at McCain, and it's more government. And I guess I was a Ron Paul fan, and doggone it, you know, you take responsibility for what it is. But we depend too much on the government because the government's got too big. And it seems like a lot of the policies that the government puts forward turn out to be failure.
So Patrick, you're not blaming free market economics for this mess?
It's not. Well, it would be part and parcel. It's one and the same. You're looking at the government. They took away a regulation. And something that we knew back in the 30s, you know, how could it be any different? Well, the markets are different. No, things change. But, you know, the basics are still there, the fundamentals of economics and stuff like that. But, you know, back to the comment, either candidate, neither one of them, I'll put it that way, really gives me a good platform. Their voting record, it's not something I'd have hoped for. And it's the same thing every 4 years. Back in the early 90s, it was the Pledge of Allegiance, a big argument over that. Let's get to the real facts, the real you know, what really matters. And the backbone of the people is the blue-collar people. And it's just, it's terrible.
Have you decided, are you going to vote for either of them, or are you going to vote for a third-party candidate like Bob Barr, who is probably closer to Ron Paul in his perspective?
Truthfully, I really don't know yet. Bob Barr, if I was honest, I'll tell you, I don't know a lot of what he's telling you, you know, or whatever. You know, I don't know a lot about him, but the media plays a big part in it, and it's a shame.
Okay, Patrick, we got to go. We've got a news break coming up. Dennis, do you have anything you'd like to add to that real quick?
Well, thinking back just a little bit when we think
And
about
you've only got 15 seconds, my
okay,
friend.
Okay, when you think about who's to blame, there's going to be enough blame to go around to all kinds of corners.
We're talking about the last days of the campaign between John McCain and Barack Obama, last night's debate. Mike and Wausau, hang on. We'll get to you right after the news break. And we want to hear from you at 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg with political scientist Eric Giordano and Dennis Riley. We'll be back right after this short break for news.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
I'm Glenn Moberg. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network, with political scientist Dennis Riley from UW-Stevens Point and Eric Giordano from UW-Marathon County, discussing last night's debate between John McCain and Barack Obama and the final days of the political campaign that will lead to one of the most important elections maybe in the history of the United States this November 4th. As always, we want to hear from you, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. And Eric, you had something that you wanted to add to Patrick's comments before the newscast.
Sure. I just wanted to say to Patrick that I certainly sympathize with his view and agree that really neither candidate has presented a serious plan for getting out of what appears to be a recession or worse. But I have some bad news for Patrick, and that is that I think he's going to be disappointed, because historically, when our economy has gone to the dumps like this, we're not going to decrease government funding. And if anything, we're going to increase it for job creation, to improve liquidity in the market. I mean, that's what the bailout is all about, and the bailout evidently isn't even enough. So unfortunately, Patrick, I don't think your wish is going to be granted.
But isn't John McCain saying that we need to cut taxes and actually put a freeze on government spending, which Barack Obama said last night was taking a hatchet to it when a scalpel was needed? I mean, he seems to be, preaching the traditional Republican line that government is the problem and we need to get it out of the way so that we can have a recovery. Dennis, your reaction?
Well, excuse me. Yeah, Glenn, he did say some of those kinds of things, but he stands behind his $300 billion for mortgages and the rest of the bailout package. And I don't know that you can freeze government spending if you've got three-quarters of a trillion already lined up. You say you can freeze the rest, but he doesn't mean it because he's not going to freeze the defense budget. He can't. He can't freeze Social Security payments. He can't freeze Medicare payments. I mean, it's just not going to be a successful business. He can freeze some aspects of the budget. It really won't produce the money to prevent the deficit from going an awful lot higher than it is already.
Let's go back to the phones. Mike in Wausau, you're on Route 51. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Glenn. I just want to thank you and your guests for the show.
You're welcome.
I apologize. This is a little bit off your topic. It's more federal government than the presidential election, but I really wish that there was more focus by the media on the role of Congress in the entire economic problem. It strikes me that this election is going to be a boon for the Democrats, and it seems to me that a fair amount of Democrats and Republicans as legislators are responsible for passing a number of laws that have reduced regulation, that have compounded the problems that we're in. If I had my wish, we would see this be a election for all the incumbents to be thrown out regardless of party.
Dennis, Eric, either of you have a reaction to that? And we all know the old adage that everyone hates Congress, but everyone loves their own congressman.
Yeah, although interestingly, I saw something the other day that suggests that they don't even love their own congressman anymore as much as they once did. But Mike makes a good point. Congress's culpability in all of this is pretty obvious in terms of the way it's handled the budgets, the way it's handled regulation over the last 15 years or so. It has made some significant changes in the world and allowed things to happen. And you hark back to Mel Laird, who's certainly observed American government even longer than I have, and talking about Congress's failure as an oversight institution. I think there's probably a great deal to be said about that. So we should be focusing on that. Now, whether that means everybody who's there now deserves to be tossed out, maybe not. Maybe you can't shovel it out quite that thoroughly. But there probably are a lot of people who deserve as much blame or more than President Bush does.
Mike, thanks so much for the phone call. I want to get to another clip. And one of the things that came out last night, as I mentioned at the start of the hour, the gloves did certainly come out, at least for John McCain, who told people that he was going to bring up Bill Ayers and some of the other negative attacks that have been made on the campaign trail. He certainly did. And what you're going to hear is an edited segment containing actually portions of three different parts of the discussion on negativity last night in the debate.
That Senator Obama has spent more money on negative ads than any political campaign in history, and I can prove it.
And 100%, John, of your ads, 100% of them have been negative.
It's not true. 100,
it absolutely is true.
Again, I did not hear a repudiation of Congressman Lewis.
Well, I mean, if we want to talk about Congressman Lewis, who is an American hero, he unprompted by my campaign, without my campaign's awareness, made a statement that he was troubled with what he was hearing at some of the rallies that your running mate was holding, in which all the public reports indicated were shouting, when my name came up, things like terrorist, and kill him, and that your running mate didn't mention, didn't stop, didn't say, hold on a second, that's kind of out of line. When people suggest that I pal around with terrorists, then we're not talking about issues.
Well,
what we're talking about...
Let me just say categorically, I'm proud of the people that come to our rallies. Mr. Harris, I don't care about an old washed-up terrorist, but as Senator Clinton said in her debates with you, we need to know the full extent of that relationship. We need to know the full extent of Senator Obama's relationship with Acorn, who is now on the verge of maybe perpetrating one of the greatest frauds in voter history in this country, maybe destroying a fabric of democracy.
Mr. Ayers has become the centerpiece of Senator McCain's campaign over the last 2 or 3 weeks. This has been their primary focus. So let's get the record straight. Bill Ayers is a professor of education in Chicago. 40 years ago, when I was 8 years old, he engaged in despicable acts with a radical domestic group. I have roundly condemned those acts.
Couple of questions. Did John McCain score any points? Did he gain anything in terms of getting more votes by bringing these allegations against Barack Obama into a debate format? Were the allegations something that should have been brought up? And comment, if you will, on the general negativity of the campaign from two guys who said that they were going to run the cleanest campaign ever.
Well, I'll just start by saying, when I looked at both candidates when Bob Schieffer asked that question, they looked extremely uncomfortable. The difference might be that, however, that McCain obviously went into this debate with a strategy of he was going to be tough. And so while he called it a tough issue, he then proceeded to attack Barack Obama, as you just heard some of those comments, about questionable relationships with so-called terrorists, as well as comments that, you know, Senator Congressman Lewis had made. So, you know, McCain did go on the aggressive there, on the offensive, rather.
But did that help him? Most of the focus groups show that they were not happy when the debate took that turn.
I think in the short term, the answer is no. We don't know. Most people I've talked to also agree, and most people publicly say that they don't like negative advertising or campaigning. But we also saw in 2004 that the Swift Boat Veteran for Truth advertising campaign had an impact, a real impact on the polls. Now, I don't know that we'll know whether some of this will stick until, you know, we get close to Election Day.
Dennis Riley, I saw Karl Rove on Fox News yesterday, and he was saying that the biggest mistake McCain made was not bringing up these allegations 2 months ago.
Well, maybe. But I kind of don't agree with that, because I think you could have brought them up any time you want. When Wall Street starts to melt down, people don't care if you once had coffee with or served on a board with a guy that 40 years ago made some really stupid mistakes. They're not going to care about that, and that's pretty clear. They may not even care about you feel insulted by John Lewis. Other people, including some conservative commentators, have raised some questions about what's going on at those rallies. But I think to reinforce the point you made, Glenn, I read a couple of things today, and Eric as well, that that stretch of the debate didn't do John McCain any good. The dial turners were getting kind of upset with him, and I think it was a combination of things. It was, again, going negative in a context where people were sort of hoping it wouldn't go that way. But also I think it was so scattershot, it kind of looked like, okay, I got 7 note cards here, and I'm going to throw them all at that guy before he gets a chance to breathe. And here they come. I'll give you William Ayers. I'll give you Acorn, which most people have no idea what that is. I'll give you John Lewis. Maybe they know him. Maybe they don't. Now, wait a minute. Let me give you something else over here. Wait a minute. I got something else over here. And there's this whole series of things. And if you remember, his final paragraph then was to say, this campaign is really about the American economy. It's really about... And that wasn't the summary of what he'd been saying for the past 4 or 5 minutes. And it really left people, I think, with the kind of nagging impression, or reinforced for those who already had it, that he was in a fairly desperate strait throwing things at this cool guy on the other side of the room, hoping that something hit him in a vulnerable spot.
Dennis Riley and Eric Giordano, guests on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're talking about the political campaign and last night's debate. If you want to join the conversation, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back with Joe the Plumber after this.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
Those numbers again, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation about last night's debate. Ned in Wausau, hang on, we'll get to you in a minute, but I do want to play a clip that not only talks about health care, but talks about the unforeseen star of last night's confrontation, a gentleman from Ohio, known as Joe the Plumber.
But I want to give every American family a $5,000 refundable tax credit. Take it and get anywhere in America the health care that you wish. Now, my old buddy Joe the Plumber's out there. Now, Joe, if you don't adopt the health care plan that Senator Obama mandates, he's going to fine you. Now, Senator Obama, I'd still like to know what that fine's going to be. Senator Obama wants to set up healthcare bureaucracies, take over the healthcare plan of America through, as he said, his object is a single-payer system. If you like that, you'll love Canada and England.
So is the that point your objective?
It is not. I just described what my plan is. And I'm happy to talk to you, Joe, too, if you're out there. Here's your fine, zero. You won't pay
zero?
A fine because, zero, because I, as I said in our last debate, and I'll repeat, John, I exempt small businesses. And once you're out on your own with this $5,000 credit, Senator McCain for the first time is going to be taxing the health care benefits that you have from your employer. And this is your plan, John. For the first time in history, you will be taxing people's health care benefits.
What about that?
Hey, Joe, you're rich. Congratulations, because what Joe wanted to do was buy the business that he's been working for 10, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you said that you wanted to spread the wealth. But in other words, take Joe's money, and then you decide what to do with it.
Joe the Plumber, who milked his 15 minutes of fame this morning with an interview outside his home in Ohio, and apparently he doesn't have a plumbing license, and there's a tax lien against his home. But nonetheless, he became a significant factor in last night's debate.
Sure. And he had his day of fame. I wonder if he's going to end up being like the Cub fan who reached over to catch the home run. In other words, he got his own facts wrong. And according to reports that we're hearing, it's very likely that, you know, under an Obama plan, he probably would get a tax break. So anyway, I'm not sure that it fit well into McCain's argument, and I think it emphasizes the point that Dennis made, which is that really, I think McCain, as the aggressor, is trying to, you know, separate himself or catch up anyway to Obama in the polls, is really had to be aggressive, and his approach has looked a bit scattershot. I mean, if you kind of look at some of the statements he's making, there's a lot of innuendo, and sometimes when you go behind and you check on the facts, they really aren't quite there.
Dennis Riley, the phrase "share the wealth" or "spread the wealth around" has been used as a pejorative to a great degree over the past couple of days. Do you think that with these incredible declines in the stock market, that kind of an attack of spreading the wealth, does that work anymore? Or are we entering maybe into a new kind of era where people are looking for the old-style New Deal politics, which led to a lot of spreading of the wealth around back in the 30s? That's how we got out of the last huge economic mess.
Well, I think so, Glenn. I mean, I think that there'll be a push in the direction of greater regulation of the financial markets, greater regulation of Wall Street, investment banking, regular banking, and so on. I mean, there's going to be a lot more government intervention. Will there be a lot of share of the wealth stuff? Well, in a sense, the wealth will be shared through a health care program, because right now there's all kinds of people that don't have access. Well, a form of wealth is to, you know, be healthy and be able to find medical care when you need it. And so many of the people that don't have it are working. It's not like they're not trying to do what they can. They just don't have it and can't afford it. So that's a kind of redistributional thing. The point is, lots of stuff redistributes money in this society. It's just a question of who it comes from and who it goes to. And we're going to have some debates about it. But I think, yeah, we may be moving in a direction where that's more acceptable and where the idea of spread the wealth is going to be less condemned than it has been in the last 20 or 25 years.
Back in the 1980s, and I'm not going to dwell on this because I want to get to this phone call. Covered a campaign by a conservative Republican congressman named Lynn Martin, who was running against Paul Simon, a U.S. senator in Illinois. And I was taken aback by her. She actually said, what we do in Congress is redistribute wealth, and there's no way around it. Anytime you tax somebody, you're taking wealth from them. Anytime you spend that money, you're giving wealth to somewhere else, whether it's a highway crew working on a highway project, or our soldiers fighting in Iraq, or Medicaid recipients. So her point was redistribution of wealth is a necessary part of government. There's no way to run a government without it.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, it's an inevitable byproduct anyway.
Right. The question is really just, you know, how much of a welfare capitalist society do you believe in? And I think Dennis is right, again, that we're probably, you know, the pendulum is swinging a bit the other way, or will be swinging the other way. It's almost inevitable given the financial crisis.
Let's go back to the phones right now. We've got Ned in Wausau. Ned, you're an Obama supporter. You've got 1 minute, my friend, because we got to move along.
Okay, well, one of the things that's really misleading is the constant charge by the McCain campaign that Obama will raise your taxes. And in fact, on June 9th of this year, the Washington Post, who took an unbiased stand to look at the two different campaigns and how much people's taxes would be raised or cut, looked at them and published it. 60% of Americans earn $66,354 or less. So that's the cutoff for 60%, three-fifths. And those people would do, as you've heard, three times better on the average for the tax cut under Obama for federal income taxes than under McCain. So I'm just really tired of that charge. And Joe the plumber can relax, because unless he's earning over $250,000 a year and his small business is earning more than that, I think that's unusual if he's just starting out his plumbing business as far as taking it over. You know, he was formerly an employee, and now he wants to take it over, is my understanding. So I don't think we should dwell on Joe the plumber.
I think, Ned, we
should dwell on the other 60% of society that'll get a much better tax cut under Obama.
Ned, we've got to move, and I'm going to go to another phone call right now before our guests weigh in. We're going to go to Ed in Lake Tomahawk. Ed, I wanted to get you in before the show was over.
Sure. Hi, Glenn, and hi, Eric. I think one of the things that just kills me is that from McCain, who preaches bipartisanship, working across the aisle, and he says that, and then the next minute he's into the absolutely negative, you know, certainly partisan issues, bringing up Lewis, bringing up Ayers, bringing up Acorn, and you know, he's working with his base, but he will never get. Well, he'd never get me to vote for him anyway, but he certainly wouldn't get those undecided voters to vote for him. They're interested in the economy. They're interested in what's happening to them. And I'm thinking, too, most of those independents probably make in that less than $250,000 range.
Ed, thanks so much for the phone call. We're going to have to let you go, and I am going to play one more clip. We've got time to fit in a subject that usually doesn't come up in debates, the subject of abortion. Here's what we heard last night.
Senator Obama is a member of the Illinois State Senate, where he voted against a ban on partial birth abortion, one of the late-term abortion, really one of the bad procedures, terrible. And then on the floor of the Illinois State Senate, he voted present. I don't know how you vote present on some of that. I don't know how you align yourself with the extreme aspect of the pro-abortion movement in America. And that's his record.
With respect to partial birth abortion, I am completely supportive of a ban on late-term abortions, partial birth or otherwise, as long as there's an exception for the mother's health and life. And this did not contain that exception. And I attempted, as many have in the past, of including that so that it is constitutional. And that was rejected. And that's why I voted present, because I'm willing to support a ban on late-term abortions as long as we have that exception. Last point I want to make on the issue of abortion. This is an issue that, look, it divides us. And in some ways it may be difficult to reconcile the two views. But there surely is some common ground when both those who believe in choice and those who are opposed to abortion can come together and say, we should try to prevent unintended pregnancies. We should try to reduce these circumstances.
Let's give Senator McCain a short response.
Just again, example of the eloquence of Senator Obama. He's health of the mother. You know, that's been stretched by the pro-abortion movement in America to mean almost anything. That's the extreme pro-abortion position, quote, health.
Dennis Riley, we've only got about 20 seconds for you. Did John McCain hurt himself by bringing up the fact that the health exemption for women in late-term abortions was something that had been overused?
I think what he did is he played back to the base, as he's done so many times. The middle road people are not going to be terribly impressed by that response. And again, this is just not on their radar screen right now. The middle road people are just not thinking about this issue.
Eric Giordano, were you surprised to hear the subject come up last night?
Well, given that it's really hasn't played a large role in this general election campaign, yeah, I was a little bit surprised. But I kind of agree with Dennis. I don't think McCain won any points with this. I think he really was playing more to the base. And I thought actually Obama comes out looking a little better because he's talking about working together to reduce the incidence of unwanted pregnancy in the first place.
Eric, who do you think is going to win the election?
Oh, I don't know. My crystal ball's a little cloudy, Glenn.
Dennis, how about you? You willing to go out on a limb?
I won't go out any farther than Nate Silver takes me on 538, which means it's a very high probability it'll be Senator Obama. But we never know, do we?
No, we don't. Thanks to today's guests, Professor of Political Science Eric Giordano of UW-Marathon County and Dennis Riley of UW-Stevens Point. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next Thursday on Route 51, a special event, the only regional debate between the candidates for Congress in the 7th Congressional District, incumbent Democrat Dave Obey and Republican challenger Dan Mielke, live at the Rose Garden in Wausau. That's next Thursday, October 23rd from 5 to 6 p.m., and we invite you to attend in person. That's it for us. Thanks for riding along with us. Until next week, we're heading out of town.